To help us to observe the universe at this sub-millimeter wavelength, researchers in the UK, the Netherlands and Canada have developed Scuba 2, a state-of-the-art wide-field camera that offers an unprecedented view of the universe at these wavelengths. Professor James Dunlop works on Scuba 2 at Edinburgh University.
In our case, we're using the sub-millimeter look at distant galaxies forming stars. So the point of this is that young stars, it just turns out, produce a lot of blue ultraviolet light. But they also tend to form in very dense, cold places in the universe surrounded by dust and gas. And what actually happens is very little of this ultraviolet light gets out. Most of it is eaten or absorbed by the dust. This is interstellar dust grains. So tiny grains of silicon and carbon, they absorb the UV light, but energy is conserved, so eventually these grains re-emit this light, but they do it at far infrared wavelengths, what we would call heat. So most of the star formation is hidden and then is re-emitted in terms of far infrared, and then we're looking at galaxies way back in time, 10 billion years ago. So as the light comes from these galaxies, it gets further stretched to even longer wavelengths. And by then, the wavelength of light is about a millimetre, just less than a millimetre. So this is where this phrase sub-millimetre comes from.
So what was new about the Scuba camera itself?
Edinburgh, well, the UK, but Edinburgh particularly, have a long history in building these cryogenic instruments, first for the infrared and then for the sub-millimetre. And they built a camera called Scuba that was the world's first sub-millimetre camera and worked in the JCMT in the mid-1990s. This is the instrument that was responsible for discovering these distant starburst galaxies that are all dust and shrouded. But that camera had only, I can't remember the exact number, about 40 or 37 or something detectors on it that all had to be hand-wired in and glued in place because nobody had basically built an imaging array in the submillimeter. So, if you like, there was no analogous submillimeter technology to the CCD cameras that are in our digital cameras nowadays. And so the Scuba 2 project set out to build a proper array of detectors like a camera, like a CCD equivalent camera for the submillimeter. And it maybe bit off more than it could chew technologically in the sense that it decided to adopt this very new technology called transition edge sensor detectors, which are superconducting devices. And at the time the project started, not only had nobody ever made an array of these objects, the largest array that had ever been made was 1 pixel. So never mind building the cryogenic camera and putting it in Hawaii, people actually, a lot of the initial technological development went into developing the first ever arrays of these transition edge sensors. And that's proved to be a big technological challenge and one of the reasons the instrument has taken kind of 10 years from conception to operating. But it works, and the result is a camera that is 100 times faster than Scuba was. And so, in a sense, by going for the long view and trying to make something genuinely revolutionary, we've had a bit of a long wait, but the result will be worth it, we now believe, now we see it working.
And what sorts of things are we seeing? You said we see these very, very distant early galaxies with young stars that we just otherwise wouldn't be able to see. What can we learn about them?
Okay, so today we, luckily for us, live in a relatively peaceful place in the universe, and the whole universe in general is fairly peaceful. So our Milky Way galaxy contains about 100 billion stars, so one with 11 zeros after it. And it's still forming stars. You would call it an active star-forming galaxy, but it's only forming stars at a relatively modest rate. So typically about 3 stars like our Sun are formed every year in the galaxy. So a tiny trickle of star formation compared to what happened in the past. And that's typical of lots of galaxies in the present-day universe. But when you look back in time, there must have therefore been a time when many more stars formed. And if you look back over cosmic history, it turns out there was an era lasting about 1 billion years, from about 10 billion years ago till about 11 billion years ago, where things were really exciting. It was the kind of Jurassic Park time of star-forming galaxies, when galaxies roamed the universe that just are not seen today, forming stars out of kind of 1,000 suns per year in these objects. And these most violently star-forming objects, A, don't exist today. Just after their frenzy of action, they somehow either shut themselves down or the black holes in them shut them down. So they had a kind of final hurrah, some kind of mad party, and then ran out of drink, basically. So we need to look back to the epoch of this mass star formation. And also, these most violently star-forming objects do seem to have been particularly enshrouded in dust, so they're the ones that you're actually least likely to see with the Hubble Space Telescope and most likely to see with Scuba 2. So it complements rather well what you can do with normal optical astronomy, because these are the objects that you wouldn't find otherwise.
So presumably there's a lot of theory that only now are we going to be able to test, now that we can actually peer into these star-forming regions.
Yeah, I mean, both detailed theories, so follow-up studies can try, with ALMA and other facilities like that, can try and take even higher resolutions of these objects. So the goal of SCUBA 2 is really to act as a survey instrument to find these things and take kind of population statistics, you know, how many of them were there, how long did they last for. But these objects in particular, because they are the most extreme star-forming objects that ever existed, have proved a particular challenge for theoretical models of galaxy formation. In fact, kind of 10 years ago, when people first started using supercomputers to make at least semi-realistic models of how galaxies grew and evolved, it's the submillimeter galaxies that have proved, you know, the most testing for these models to produce. The typical picture of galaxy formation in our universe kind of follows from small galaxies merging together into bigger units, such that naively you would think the biggest galaxies would just be being formed nowadays and there'd be quite a lot of action in the present-day universe. In fact, for reasons that we're still working to understand, what the submillimeter galaxies tell us is that there was much more rapid escalation to really giant star-forming galaxies during the first 2 to 3 billion years, and then there was some feedback process that stopped that, with the result that the biggest galaxies in the universe nowadays are long since dead, and in fact they're the remnants of these very active galaxies 10 billion years ago. And this is really an observationally driven subject. This has really forced the galaxy formation theory people to inject new things into their models, like violent black hole feedback and things, just to try to reproduce these observations.
Professor James Dunlop from Edinburgh University's Royal Observatory.